Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. But if this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, though, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about tactics with marketing consultant and Clarity marketeer Claire Porteous, with head of marketing at Momentum, Alexandra Koenig, with head of marketing at 8 Associates, Greg Hart, CMO and co-founder of Lido Marketing Technologies, Santu Kotala, and founder and CEO of Digital Whiskey, Peter Beyer. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in business marketing land. And we've reached T. T stands for tactics. Five experts will talk on the topic today, starting with the marketing consultant at Clarity Marketeer, Claire Porteous. Claire, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thank you so much for such a great intro, and hello everyone. I'm going to completely throw it out of the playing field now and say you shouldn't be focusing in on tactics. I'm going to talk to you about the things that I put in place before I even consider tactics. Also, if I had a pound for every private equity, VC group, owner founder that came to me and said, Claire, what should we do to scale our business? We only have this pot of money. We only have this timeline. And I always say to them, there is no one silver bullet. You've got to do it all really well, because the prospect journey is numerous and varied. So all of your channels have to be up to scratch. So I'm going to take you through my thinking in a couple of stages and what I do. And within there are tactics. Yes, there are always tactics, but without getting the fundamentals in place, you know, just simply focusing in on the tactics isn't going to work. So you'd be amazed how many founders, owners, even private equity groups who specialize in scaling, you know, scale up, turnaround, Series A, Series B businesses come to me without the following: very limited understanding of their ICP, that the ideal customer profile. I think that's absolutely critical. They don't have a customer and market centricity approach to what they're doing. They don't really understand their buyer persona. Who's going to buy and why? What pain points is your product resolving? You know, what's that fundamental essence of your reason for being? And then ultimately, what's your total addressable market? Without that in place, and maybe that's a tactic, right? Right at the start, you just talk to yourself and go, okay, well, what are we doing and why are we doing it? And who are we going after? And what do we know about them? I once walked into a business which was significantly underperforming. It was a turnaround. It had been bought by a private equity group. And the first thing I asked the existing team was, what do you know about your customer? And they came back with, well, Claire, we think we know. And I was like, you think or do you know? And it turns out they hadn't ever spoken to their customer, and their product wasn't getting any traction. The campaigns were failing. The messaging wasn't hitting. And the first thing I said to them is, you should never think. You should always know. So a program around talking to your customer base and having that constant feedback, whether that's for your sales team, invariably are the closest thing to your customer because they're always talking to them, or just some kind of like formalized R&D is so important. That's the first thing. Know your customer. Don't think you know. And have a market and customer-centric approach at the heart of your business. Second thing is my take on the four Ps. Now, we all know the four Ps traditionally are product, promotion, price, and placement. I have another four Ps, and it's called planning prevents poor performance. Now, your tactics might be short term. They might be last minute. They might be reactionary. You might want an agile response to something that's happening. You might want to iterate. But without the proper infrastructure, tools, reporting, competence, team structure, and communications in place, they're just going to fall flat. And you know what? All of this stuff can be done way, way, way in advance. There's no reason to leave anything like that to the last minute. So if a tactic is get your house in order to perform, then that was what I would say you do. And that's all across. It's kind of what you do, how you do it, the tools you use, why you use them. What does the business need to be told about what you're doing? What transparency, what accountability? How do your teams know if they're being successful? That's all measurable, but equally important. Third thing, and I really feel like I should be on commission for HubSpot, because one of the things, one of my staple go-tos is the tech stack within any B2B business. So if a tactic is make sure you've got the right tech stack in place, I always advocate for one source of truth. And invariably that leads any business in the B2B world to HubSpot. The MA, the reporting, the CRM and the CMS. They want to always advocate for HubSpot because I do feel like I should be on commission for them. But what that enables you to do is have end-to-end tracking. You can optimize, you've got clarity and clearness in your reporting. It prevents that leaky bucket of where are my prospects, where are my MQLs, where are my SQLs, what's happening to my close lost? You know, what channels are performing at what pace? Where are my conversion hotspots? Where am I not converting? You know, where do I need to focus in on my channels? So get that tech stack in place and don't underestimate how much work that's going to take. Another tactic I would argue or put in place is don't presume that you're going to be an expert at it. It takes 6 months for HubSpot to really bed into a business. But make sure that you invest in your team, your people, in terms of training them to really, really get to grips with that software. There have been many, many companies I've walked into where they bought in HubSpot because it's been a tick box exercise for them. And then what they found is that they're using it by 5%. My usual thing is, great, you've got HubSpot in play, but you're probably using it between 5 to 10% of its capacity. So go loop back around and really, really think of it as a one source of truth for your business. My fourth point, and it probably should be at number one because, you know, this is something I'm incredibly passionate about. As a tactic, or even as a strategy, or as a foundation stone, is get your data to a place where it's at the heart of your business. So whether you're thinking of building, maintaining, cleansing, how you collect data, why you collect data, what you do with the data, have a process around that. It will save you hours of pain in the long run if you have a clear data strategy. And by that, I mean what you collect from the various different campaigns and why, what you qualify as an MQL, what you qualify as a lead, you know, equally what you do with the data and how often does your data churn. You know, I track everything from churn of data to bounce rate to soft to hard bounces, you know, and ultimately I'm forever looking at what are my channels doing in terms of helping me build that data. Data is so critical in terms of understanding your customers, your prospects, but also enabling your marketing. A lot of companies underestimate the data and then they have to spend weeks, months, thousands of pounds sorting out their data. Do not do that. Right at the start, if you're in the luxury of thinking of starting out, have a data strategy at the beginning. One, and something I've carried through my career and something I hold very dearly to me, maybe it's a tactic, but I'd say it's a foundation stone, is, you know, remember that you're not an island, that happy teams make productive teams, make highly performing teams. So I have a bathroom wall and it's covered with thank you letters from people who have worked with me in their marketing careers. And I've always felt that as a marketing leader, for want of a better word, more like a mentor, if my teams will say, I always think it's my job to help people fulfill their potential, you know, to give them the tools in their toolbox to enable them to go on and just do brilliant things in their life or their career, whether that's work or life. I'm just concerned with their happiness. I think it's, you know, now with even more so, mental health and well-being in the workplace is even more important. So it's really critical that as a marketeer, you're aware of the strains and the pressures that your team are now under and be there to support them and to listen to them and to care for them. You know, I can't tell you how many times that I've looked across my team and have been there for them, both professionally and personally. And they, you know, my team have always, you know, over excelled in certain areas. My last big marketing team was shortlisted for B2B Team of the Year by CIM. And it's purely that I put at the heart of the ethos of team spirit, which is your happiness is important, your growth as an individual is important. So as a tactic, as a foundation stone, whatever we want to call it, remember that your team are very important. And it isn't just a tick box exercise. Listen, nurture and mentor them. That's your job. Number six on my list. Don't worry, it doesn't go on for much longer. I completely kind of live by this. I measure everything and I act in a transparent way. So with a tactic, it's all around reporting, but then it's about how that reporting is communicated upwards, sideways, downwards to the business. It's so important that marketing isn't seen as a dark art, especially in B2B, that it's really clear what you're driving into the pipeline of the business, that everything can be measured, everything has a metric. There's a clear ROI, there's a clear conversion journey, there's a clear kind of like, this is the forecast revenue that the inbound or outbound marketing has achieved. And articulate and understand that kind of revenue conversation is really important as well. The amount of times I've heard, I'm not sure what the marketing function is delivering into the business. That's absolutely incorrect. They should be sure because we've done our due diligence and we've put the reports in place in order to do that. Number seven, something that I think should be a tactic, but also a life philosophy, which is don't procrastinate and talk yourself out of things. The amount of startups or Series B with very, very clever people. I was just on a VC with one earlier today, and he was talking about this amazing outbound campaign. I was like, that's really good. That's hyper-personalized. And as he was talking through it, he began to talk himself out of it. And I watched someone who was really bright, really clever, but full of questions, talk himself completely out of the campaign. And I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I'm not so sure. There are so many unknowns. And then we spoke about, well, sometimes you're not always going to have all the answers. Sometimes the journey and the discovery is just as important as the execution. Don't be afraid to learn and fail, but take the learnings and the failings, for want of a better word, and iterate. Especially if you're in that startup scale-up mode, really important to try and test new things all the time and just get the data in and go, oh, that bit worked, that bit didn't work. But like, have fun with it. You know, not everyone, no one is going to come onto this podcast today and give you all the answers. What they hopefully, my peers will say, is it's part of a discovery journey where you have really considered input, insight, and you act on it. But there's a little bit of chaos and madness as well, where you just think, hey, I've never done this before. What would happen if? So you're incessantly curious as a marketeer. Next one, I think I'm on number eight. Another one that's dear to me is listen to your sales team. If this is a tactic, so I would invariably go and sit in with my sales team. I'd listen to their calls. I'd sit and have lunch with them. I would buy them treats just to kind of hear what the customers were saying to them. They are such an important part of your marketing function in terms of they are constantly in contact with your customers and your prospects. They will know more than you about what is going on in the marketplace. A great example, and one thing that I did about 2 years ago when I was working as a full-time CMO, was I had this amazing campaign, amazing setup. All the content was gone, all the assets were gone. Went into the sales team meeting and the head of sales went, Claire, we've got this thing showing up called COVID. It's really, really starting to get quite a lot of traction. And there's a whole degree, I'm not sure we should do the campaign. I think we should do this. And it would have been easy for me to go, no, we have to do this campaign. It's all organized, it's all done. But I looked at him and I looked straight into his eyes and I could see that he was genuine and he really felt that it was the wrong thing to do. And sure enough, we pivoted. In 24 hours, we had a new campaign out the door. And it was basically talking to that persona about the challenges, the fears, and what was going to lie ahead. And none of us knew in the light of the new world order, which is the COVID and the pandemic. Sure enough, it was one of the most successful campaigns we've ever done in the history of the company. Now, I wouldn't have done that had I not listened or taken the time to listen to my salesperson, which is why I absolutely say 100% listen to your sales team. They are the ones with their finger on the pulse of your customer and their customer ecosystem. Number nine, I think, it's And this goes back to one of the ones previously. One thing I stress to anyone and everyone is that you're not saving lives, right? Ultimately, having a perspective on everything that you do. And so maybe this is a tactic, maybe this is just an approach. But being able to see the bigger picture is so critical in B2B marketing. You can get so stuck in the funnel, literally, that you can't see, you know, the wood for the trees. I'm saying explore the trees, explore the wood, and just understand that, you know, having that perspective can deliver great things. And ultimately, you know, I always encourage people to have fun with it. You know, and that goes back to don't be afraid to try new things. Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid that you don't have all the answers. You don't have to. You just need to enjoy the journey and have that incessant curiosity. I think that's it. I think my last one was you're not an island. So work well with your colleagues as a tactic. Surface up metrics that you think would be valuable to them. Listen and learn from them just as much as they learn from you. Marketing is one of those functions, especially in B2B, where I see the marketing function as a cog, and you have various different people within the cog. You have sales, you have finance, you have operations, you have product, you have PR. And ultimately, one of your roles is to make sure that the cog keeps the wheel of the business going round. And in order to do that, you've just got to be really good at communication and also a high level of empathy, a high level of emotional intelligence, and just realizing that everyone's in the same boat with the same, you know, but with different pressures. And your job is really ultimately to make the business as successful as it possibly can be, and also have a lot of fun and take your colleagues with you on the journey. That's my
inspirational. Thank you, Claire.
That's it.
Thank you. That was great. Cheers.
Problem.
Our second tactics expert is the head of marketing at Momentum, Alexandra Koenig. Alexandra, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks so much. Really happy to be here. To start, I just wanted to give a little background on myself. So as you mentioned, I'm the head of marketing at Momentum. I'm probably one of the few people who actually went to school for marketing and ended up pursuing it as a career when I started out back home in Canada. But I actually started in B2C when I began my career, which was primarily in experiential and digital marketing. Then when I moved to the UK and started looking for my next marketing job, I came across what was then known as Momentum ABM and learned about account-based marketing, and I was instantly fascinated. I thought I knew personalization from my B2C background, but this was next level. And I remember thinking, isn't this what we should all be doing? So long story short, I ended up ABMing the company when I applied and got the job. And I've been at Momentum for a few years now, growing the marketing function and helping drive some ambitious targets. And just a quick background on Momentum, we are a B2B growth consultancy and the pioneers of account-based marketing, and we focus primarily on helping our clients grow their key accounts and grow revenue in new accounts and markets, and we're based in the US and UK. So when you originally reached out to me and asked about which marketing tactics are working for us right now, there were definitely a handful that came to mind right away. This last year has been changing so much, and probably not unlike everyone else. We had to try a lot of new things, and we also held on to some of our tried and tested methods. So for now, I'll just talk about a couple of the ones that really worked for us. The first one is maximizing the output you get from everything that you do. The second is co-creating with clients, prospects, and peers. And the last one is simple, just don't forget to be human. But before we think about the tactics, we need to think and do a lot of groundwork to increase our chances of success. So at Momentum, we have a really rigorous process of getting to know our customer profile and their buying journey. We spend a lot of time identifying the ideal customer profile, plotting the points of their life cycle, and really understanding how we can become a strategic partner rather than another vendor. So although these tactics are all really great, it does take a lot of time and energy up front to line us up for success. So as I mentioned, the first one I said was maximizing output. And I think as many marketers will know, marketing doesn't always take priority at an organization. So it's really important to maximize the time and resources we do have available to us. So By that, I mean, like, get the most out of everything we produce. So recycle existing content, which can be as simple as taking an old thought leadership piece and turning it into some social posts, highlighting it on your website again. Podcasts are the same, actually. We put a lot of effort into making sure we have really good guests and have good production value. So we repurpose every podcast into numerous assets. You know, some people don't have time to listen to a 25-minute podcast or don't have headphones available. So we need to make sure we still capture that audience. And we do that by turning them into articles, audiograms, sending some info out via email and newsletters, and doing co-promotion with the guests, which is not unlike what BMC does with your podcast. And we also get a lot of mileage out of our events. And I learned this early in my career that events are so much more than the physical virtual event. Now more than ever, people are really sensitive about their time, and a lot of people sign up for things that they can't actually attend because they know they'll have access to a recording. So it's up to us as marketers to make sure that the content reaches beyond the attendees and make sure that it hits all of the relevant customers and prospects in our database. So I'd say pre and post communication around events are key. Making sure after an event you're highlighting what people missed, including teasers to the key takeaways, highlight the speakers that were there, but really highlighting what people missed so that they'll be inclined to want to reach out or at least click to learn more or attend your next event. So by reusing stuff you've already done and saving your time, we're able to continually keep our content up to date and make sure it's staying relevant. The second one I mentioned is co-creating, and this is my favorite form of marketing and probably always has been. And we co-create in two ways. One is co-creating internally by assigning internal experts to different campaigns related to different topics around their areas of expertise. And the other is by co-creating with clients and prospects. So when we co-create internally, it becomes that person's responsibility to pull together the assets for that campaign. And from an internal perspective, this helps get immediate buy-in. And I always say to the team that marketing is too important to be left to marketing alone. So everyone needs to get involved, and this helps hold other people accountable. And externally, co-creation allows us to interact with different industry experts, and by default, we expand our audience. So I know I mentioned earlier about getting to know our customers, and this is one way we do it kind of in a less formal setting. So in more than one instance, co-creating with someone has actually been a door opener for us with prospects. For example, on our podcast, we've had many listeners who've become clients, but we've also had some podcast guests who've become clients after having a few good conversations and really understanding what working together could look like. And we tend to co-create with people that are in relevant industries. We invite them to showcase their strengths and skill sets, which in return should help them raise their own profiles as well. And by doing that, not only are we able to cover a wide range of topics, but we also get more specific with different experts. And this is a really good way to guarantee that we're talking to our customers about real problems. And for me, the main reason to co-create is that diversity of thought is so important. And I work with a team of brilliant people. And I think the best part of these people's brilliance is that they know there's always more to learn and they're hungry to do that. So that's why we're always happy to get external perspectives and co-create whenever we can. And the last one I want to mention is just be human. Don't forget to be respectful of people's time. And I know I mentioned this at the start, but personalization is so much more than, "Hi, Dave, here's a generic email, but we used your name, so hopefully you'll read this." Personalization in this world is about understanding specific clients, their industries, their problems, and being able to think ahead of them by having an idea of the big picture, which includes and starts with being human. So those are the three tactics that I have been and will continue to stand by. And I know that's just a few, and there's so many other that we're using and that we've tried. But if there's anything we've learned right now, it's that in this world, it's about continuous learning, evolving, and adapting. So my one tip would be to have an open mind. Don't be afraid to try something new. Measure and analyze it, improve it, and try again. Great marketing doesn't come overnight.
Great tips. Alex Koenig, thank you very much. Our third tactics expert is the head of marketing at 8 Associates, Greg Hart. Greg, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, for having me. I'll be honest, when you first asked me to speak about tactics, I thought, oh no, not this subject. Of all the marketing topics you're covering from A to Z, how have I ended up with this one? And I don't know why this was my initial reaction. It seemed to sort of stir up some negative thoughts towards tactics. And I had to check myself and question, why was that my default reaction? What has scarred me to think so badly about the word tactics? And I'm not sure if other marketers feel this way. You'll probably be able to tell with how many people listen to this podcast compared to the rest. But I think one of the main reasons I initially felt this way is because I was thinking about it in isolation. And when you think about a tactic in isolation, it doesn't really have much meaning. It doesn't hold a lot of power. It makes me think of spam, to be honest. But marketing tactics are the day-to-day for many marketers. And we can spend a lot of our time executing different marketing tactics in the hope that they might achieve something good so that we can then validate whether to do more of it or less of it. And it's easy to get bogged down in these tactics. And the deeper we dive into certain things, the more isolated our thinking can get. And the deeper we dive into certain tactics, the more isolated our thinking can get as we concentrate on things like whether subject line A proves to be more effective than subject line B. And I'm not saying this is wrong, of course. A-B testing is a great way to improve your effectiveness with email marketing. But it's quite easy for marketers to get stuck in a rut and not really know why. That rut can be when we don't pull ourselves up out of that tactical hole we've fallen into and focus on strategy. There's many wise words out there about what tactics without strategy means. They're normally from some old war generals, but it is true with marketing. Tactics is just noise without strategy. And it's probably quite easy to identify. Bad marketing is just a lot of noise without really any structure or thought. So there's loads of different tactics a marketer can consider. And I'm sorry to say I don't have the silver bullet. I can't say what I think is the best one as it depends on so many factors. I've worked for big, multi-complex organizations and also small companies, and they both need very different things. But ultimately, what I can talk about is just some thoughts on what to consider when deciding and delivering the best kind of tactics for your organization. So the first thing to think about, and maybe the most important, is what I have pretty much already alluded to, which is to create or understand the strategy. This just allows for such a more concentrated effort with your marketing, and hopefully, if the strategy is right, a more successful one too. I'm currently working for a small organization where we're at the very beginning of building the marketing function. And so there's a lot of important questions that we are working through to help feed the marketing strategy and future growth plans. And this process has been so essential. If I came in and started to crack on with tactics and try and get through a list of activities without any thought or consideration as to why or for who, then I don't think we'd get very far and marketing's value would quickly be questioned. The second thing is that you may have to accept that you'll need to do both strategy and tactics at the same time. As much as I'd love for these things to happen consecutively, I think in reality, we need to strike the right balance between strategizing and doing, which means learning as you go. I mentioned strategy being the first and most important thing, but unfortunately, I don't think we always can spend too much time in this space before the business starts to look for some marketing output. A lot of this depends on your organization or your team, of course, but there does come a point when you just need to get going with the tactics and you need to trial and assess your marketing things in order to see whether your strategy is on the right lines or it needs tweaking or it needs completely rewriting. Things can move so quickly that if you spend so long strategizing, you'll need to go back and start again before you get the chance to even go to market with your tactics. So it's often best to think about the two running concurrently with the constant need to tweak and amend as you go. My third thing is, when thinking about your tactics, is just be creative. I know this isn't always that straightforward, but I think it needs to be a conscious effort in order to make a difference. I mentioned being bogged down in tactics and not being able to focus on the bigger picture because I think this can sometimes dampen creativity. When you're often thinking about what's next on the list or what needs to be done tactically, You can forget to apply some time for idea creation or for new initiatives or for some exploratory things that can really enhance your marketing. I mean, definitely use your data you gain from different tactics and analyze what's working and what's not. But ultimately, you're going to have to be creative to get your audience's attention. So it's worth thinking about, what time are you giving yourself to be creative? Where are you drawing inspiration from? What new and exploratory things can you try out with your different marketing tactics? Because as a marketer, it is essential for us to think alternatively and think what's going to make us stand out above the competition. And sometimes that doesn't happen if we focus on what's currently working or not working, or what's next on our to-do list, or simply thinking about a tactic in isolation.
Our fourth tactics expert is the CMO and co-founder of Lidoo Marketing Technologies, Santu Kottala. Santu, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure to be here. So as Dave mentioned, my name is Santu. I run marketing at Lidoo Marketing Technologies. Lidoo is a conversion platform to help companies to turn more of their existing website traffic into leads and sales. My finding and my recent tactic or hack, at least, could be that how to hack thought leadership webinars organized by your own company to generate instant sales qualified leads. So as we all know, many B2B marketers run webinars as part of their marketing efforts, and we at Lidoo are no exception. We host roughly at least two new business webinars with thought leadership themes in our own field and gather roughly 500 signups every month. We don't sell in these events, but rather create quality content together with our guests. Probably because of this, the no-show rate is really low and attendees rate our events roughly 4.2, 4.3 in the scale of 1 to 5. But as you all know who ever hosted a webinar, there is still quite a long way to go from a thought leadership webinar into turning that prospect into a sales qualified lead. So we've come up with two hacks, as these are called nowadays, everything's a hack. And with the help of these two rather small things, we're able to turn roughly 15% of all our signups into instant sales qualified leads, which in our case means that the prospect wants to meet with us as soon as possible. So quickly about our product, like I said, Lidoo is a conversion platform that helps companies to turn existing website traffic into leads or sales. In our webinars, we always focus on a certain topic like conversion optimization, website performance development, online sales, and these kinds of topics. All of these topics interest sales and marketing professionals, but these are also topics that are quite in touch with our product and how our product can help them out with. Now that you know the background of our business, let me reveal the two hacks. So first, when people sign up for a webinar, the heavy lifting is filling in your contact details on the event page. You know, your name, email address, company, and so forth. That's the most difficult part. And that is often done via a static contact form, which just collects the info and that's it. We use a chatbot to collect that info as it can continue the conversation after collecting the info. So after the prospect has signed up, we suggest them a free consultation on the event topic with one of our experts. So turning that person from an MQL into an SQL is only, well, basically one button away, as they've already filled in their contact details. This small thing makes on average 5 to 10% of signups turn into SQLs. So really something to try out. Secondly, we use a webinar tool that has engagement tools that track webinar engagement from all participants and all participants individually. And that is super important to be able to execute this hack. At the latter part of the webinar, we put out a question whether someone would like to address this topic in a one-to-one call with our topic expert. Once again, this is a super convenient way for the attendee to ask for help. They only need to click one button. We call this the in-webinar conversion, gets us again on average 5 to 10% new SQLs from webinar registrations. That was it. So I hope you found these tricks useful and applicable to your own webinars. And what I've personally realized with these hacks is that improving your results doesn't mean you need to start something totally new. Instead, maybe some small tweaks in what you already are good at might be where the lowest hanging fruits are.
That was brilliant. I suppose I should call you a hacker then. Thanks to our resident hacker, Santu Katala. Thank you very much. Our final tactics expert is the founder and CEO of Digital Whisky, Peter Beyer. Peter, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. I've got a sleeping giant of a tactic for you and your listeners today, and that's using your PR to up your advertising game. Specifically, advertising on LinkedIn, where we've seen promoting your PR consistently outperforms any other type of content that we've seen. And as a B2B advertising agency, this is a subject really close to our heart. You know what it's like when you're scrolling through LinkedIn. You're probably on your phone, looking for a distraction from the important stuff. You're killing time and kidding yourself that you're doing it productively. At least that's what I'm like. But as marketers, our job is to work with that, not against it. We have to get a quick message across. We think that most marketers are like that guy at Oxford Circus who wants you to renounce all your sins. You're walking down the street, you've got somewhere to be, you don't have time for that kind of stuff. What can we do to get their attention? I'll wind it back a little. The reason that I chose this particular tactic beyond our advertising presence is that more and more B2B advertisers are using LinkedIn. This is not just our evidence. This is borne out by LinkedIn's most recent record quarter for advertising revenue. And it's popular for good reason. When a B2B advertiser can answer the question, who's been exposed to this campaign? That's incredibly helpful, particularly if you're introducing advertising budgets for the first time. And the excellent Firmographic reports backs all this up. LinkedIn lets us target advertising messages very precisely to reach beyond our core client, prospect, and referral audiences. And this is sort of where most of the BD and sales activity is focused, so we need to get beyond that. But unless you get the content and the creative right, you're leaving impact on the table. Here's an example. One of our clients, a brilliant biotech firm in the States, was seeking an acquirer from a list of highly specialized SPACs. We can add that to one of the phrases we weren't using a few years ago. I should hasten to add that they have now just gone public via one of those SPACs. Back to the campaign. They wanted to develop salience and familiarity ahead of meetings, amplify the positive press that they were receiving to a very niche audience. And this is all based around a CEO visibility program. And LinkedIn became a really important part of the media plan. Of course, we created lots of different targeting filters to reach the audience, but the PR just kept outperforming everything else. So in the end, that was all we used. And we built up a really strong association for the CEO with those trusted media brands. We also leaned really heavily on that facial recognition in tandem with the media owner branding. Faces work well on LinkedIn. I'm going to follow up with some pointers on that in a moment. So at certain junctures of the campaign, the coverage was coming thick and fast. The PR team was doing an amazing job. To ensure speed to feed, we edited or animated, reshaped, recut content. We wanted to make the most of both the imagery, but also the video and interview assets that was coming along. And that really helped when we were trying to streamline the approval process. This increased creative diversity, reduced burnout, and it kind of increases that impression of buzz. It was a really successful way to make that PR work even harder. Social proof is a powerful way to demonstrate that a company deserves the audience's attention. This is just one example of that. Amplifying positive press coverage from premium media outlets is consistently successful now for our clients. We always prefer to use not what the firm says about itself, but what other trusted brands say about the firm. And using those media brands will increase proxy measures by 2 to 3x in any of your LinkedIn advertising, I guarantee it. It doesn't matter to us whether the client's a consultant, a law firm, or in life sciences, the results are always the same. So here are some pointers for using PR in your LinkedIn advertising. First of all, when it comes to the creative, do prioritize that media owner branding over your own. I appreciate that that sounds counterintuitive, but it's a key point. If you share directly from the media site, you'll end up with that stock image and limited impact. LinkedIn's got enough stock images already. So really create your own, get that media owner, that logo nice and prominent in what you're doing. Reuse content so you make the most of that imagery and those video assets that we talked about. And back to the faces, they perform well in this environment. LinkedIn is, after all, a platform where the content is about the people you know and meet through work, so it stands to reason. And then we need to think about really grabbing attention. A couple of tips here, ad movement. Now, we're not talking about a Disney level production, just something subtle that catches the eye. Go and find that expert in After Effects in your department. Look at novel formats. Try and get into like format busting mode where possible. We always look for ways to break through the boundaries of the ad, make use of white space, just something a little bit different. For the headlines, make sure they're large and concise. They've got to be glanceable headlines. I understand that partners and execs, they really want to tell of the nuance and complexity in their work, but you've got to help them keep it simple. Then use all caps, use regular spacing, not condensed. And then the final point really is just test everything. You should be running this stuff for long enough to run some testing and you'll be able to see for yourself what's working best and then push your budget in that direction. Simple stuff, don't overcomplicate it, but hopefully your listeners will be able to use this tactic themselves soon. Thanks for having me on, Dave.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Claire Porteous, Alexandra Koenig, Greg Hart, Santu Kotala, and Peter Beyer. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to www.businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.